You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I look forward to this all week long.
What? Are you kidding me?
I'm going to say it's a valid call.
Gee, who cares?
Couldn't disagree more with Swagoo.
Ryan Clark, what do you think?
I think you're wrong.
We scrapping.
Did you want to like a better answer than that? Because you're absolutely wrong.
We are scrapping.
Come on, guys. This ain't rocket science.
I don't have any time for your facts and math. Dan Graziano, you are ridiculous.
They don't have no love for each other.
You are a smart aleck.
Yes, G, absolutely.
What in the Bill O'Brien is going on?
The Brooklyn Nets are hiring Steve Nash. What's your reaction to Steve Nash? Look at your face.
Stop, G.
Gotta love 2020 in Duval.
Duval!
Thank you. Free the Big Ten.
This might be the first time in my life I've ever agreed with a Harbaugh.
Give everyone a sense who's not been following just some of the adversity that the Eagles are going to have to overcome if they're going to do what I say they're going to do.
Yeah, well, the biggest adversity they're going to have to overcome is the fact that you're picking them to win the division, Greeny.
I could watch that all day long. What a fun week we have had here, and I would like to say that today is the 16th annual College Colors Day. So for people wondering, is Greeny wearing a Northwestern tie? Yes. You better believe I'm wearing a Northwestern tie today, repping my school. I am an alum. I'm married to an alum, and I'm the father of a current student. I love my school. I hope you love yours. And I'm here repping Northwestern on College Colors Day. And a very busy Friday, indeed. Let's get up with another insane NBA finish. You will hear a Hall of Famer inspired a play that may have changed everything then. Captain Cam. What surprise are he and his coach cooking up that the entire league has never seen before? We'll take you there. And our division predictions take us to the NFC North, where Aaron is angry. But does he have enough help to win it again? We'll answer all those questions as we get up with you, starting right now. Oh, what a finish. Game of the night. Celtics, Raptors, Boston trying to go up 3-0 on the defending champs. Pick it up, just over 3 to play. Celtics up 2. Fred Van Vliet turns it over. We're going the other way. Tatum, Marcus Smart. He's in trouble. Now he's not. Jaylen Brown is cutting. Oh, and he throws it down. Jaylen Brown had 19 points, 12 boards. Celtics up 4. Under 30 to go. Raptors down a deuce. Van Vliet. He was spectacular. 25 points for Van Vliet. Tied at 101. Shot clock is turned off. Boston's possession. Under 10 to play. Kemba, double. Kemba in trouble. Oh, what a pass! Kemba Walker dumps it for Daniel Tice with less than a second remaining. The vision, spectacular. Kemba Walker, it would appear, has just dethroned the champs. What a pass with 0.5 seconds remaining. Tice for the uncontested slam. Celtics up a deuce. Raptors call timeout. Huge taco fall in to cover the inbound. Brian Anderson on TNT. Let us hear how this went.
Series on the line. Anunoby got it off and it goes. Did it count is the question. OG Anunoby buries a triple at the buzzer.
What an unbelievable play. It did count. It keeps the Raptors alive. What a finish. Raptors win.
My shot, I expected to make it. So like, I don't shoot trying to miss. Like every shot I shoot, I try to make it. So I was going to act surprised because I wasn't surprised.
0.5 on the clock. We just needed one stop to win the game, and we ended up losing.
Oh, gee, Anunoby, 23 years old, third youngest player to make a game-winning buzzer beater in the playoffs. Luka just did it a couple of days ago, and Derek McKee is the other. He's also the second Raptor to make one. Kawhi did it last year in the second round, and I got Big Perk and Zach Lowe with me here. And Big Perk, when something like that happens, I have to admit, the first thought that usually goes through my mind is, how does a defense give that up in that spot? I think that in football all the time, and you see it last night. So take us through, how did the Celtics let that happen to them last night?
Well, first of all, who was Jason Tatum guarding? He was guarding no one. You put a 7-6 taco fall on the ball, and then you have miscommunication between Jaylen Brown and Tice. and it leaves OG wide open in the corner. But the thing is, Greeny, how did Kyle Lowry make that pass? That was a phenomenal pass. It was on time, on target, over a 7'6" taco fall. And I knew OG was going to make it. You know why, Greeny? He's 8-for-14 in threes this series, and 12 of those are from the corner three.
And from them. We are back on Get Up. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol. Our apologies. My microphone died. There was literally nothing we could do but go to a break. Let's continue the conversation. Before we were so rudely interrupted, I was talking to Big Perk and Zach Lowe about the miracle shot that Toronto pulls off last night. OG Anunoby knocking down a shot with 0.5 seconds remaining to save the Raptors' season. So, Zach, let's try and put things, because you did this so well, let's try and put this into some sort of historical perspective. The defending champion Raptors were basically done if they don't pull off that miracle. If they turn this into a long playoff run, where do we put that play and that shot into some sort of historical context?
Well, it's an if, right? I mean, it's not like Kawhi's four bouncer last night that immediately you advance or you don't. This is if they win this series, if they get back in this series, that becomes, let's say they have a 40% chance now to win this series. I don't know. If that doesn't go in, they have a 0% chance. Just that percentage swing is enormous. It's one of the biggest swings ever. And I want to say credit to Perk for hitting on Kyle Lowry's pass. That pass is absolutely ridiculous. If it's here, 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 the Raptors season is over.
That's exactly right, because he has to take the shot with 0.5 seconds remaining, the definition of catch and shoot, and Lowry had to throw it over or around Taco Fall, who was 7'6". So, at this point, 2-1 Boston. They've looked like the better team, but the Raptors obviously take momentum from that. Big Perk, who's going to win this series?
Greeny, you know I picked the Raptors in six, and you know I'm stubborn. I'm from Texas. We got a lot of pride. But the Celtics have the better team. They have better playmakers. They have a three-headed monster in Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, and Jaylen Brown. And the Raptors have no answer for them. They try to trap them. That's not happening. They are making the right passes. And I strongly believe that the Raptors' big Serge Ibaka, and especially Marcus Gasol, are too slow to guard them in the pick and rolls. So I'm looking at this Celtic team, and they have that three-headed monster. Each one of those guys are capable of having monster nights, and I give the edge to the Celtics. But my pride, I'm going to stick with my pick, and I'm going to ride with it until it's over with. Raptors in six.
I love it. What you've just done, you've learned so well. You have gone to the Greeny School of Predictions. You picked both sides. You're good either way. Now you have officially picked both sides. That's genius. Zach Lowe, who do you think is going to win?
Well, first of all, you're both wimps. Second of all, I picked Boston in seven, and I'm sticking with Boston in seven. I think this is a good matchup for Boston and a bad matchup for Toronto for lots of reasons that Perk just outlined. But Toronto grinds, man. They have a championship culture. Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, the easy threes, the off-the-dribble ones that were open, weren't going in for the first three quarters of last night, so they put their head down. They drove. They made some tough threes, 56 points combined. They're going to grind, but if Pascal Siakam can't get off a little bit in this series, I just don't think Toronto's going to score enough in the half court to win, so I'm going Boston still.
All right, fair enough. And so, Zach, listen, I will agree with you. I'm unquestionably a wimp. The big fella here, I'm not sure. I look forward to seeing the two of you guys together in studio as soon as we can do it. And we'll settle that one. All right, well done, fellas. Thank you. Now back to football. It is the news many expected. Now it has happened. It's official. Bill Belichick has named Cam Newton the team's starting quarterback. But he didn't stop there. He also announced that Cam will be one of the team's offensive captains in just his first year with the team. Not only first year, but he basically just got there. Cam posting on Instagram, "New England, I will not and do not take this opportunity for granted. I'm so grateful for this organization, my teammates, and this city." That feels like big news to me. Let's see what my football crew things about it this morning as we bring in Rob Ninkovich, the big fella, Marcus Spears, the big swagoo is here, and Kimberly Martin is here as well. And Rob, I'd like to start with you again as the former Patriot captain. Take us through how big a deal, how much should I be making of the fact that Cam Newton, who people were speculating, you know what, he may not even wind up making this team, is now not only the starting quarterback, but he's a captain. How big a deal should I be making of that?
I mean, it's a very big deal. Look, he's been there 3 weeks, and now he's the team captain in the starting week one. So he has come in and done exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to win the starting job. He wants to be there week one, ripping his chest open, Superman style. So, look, he has put himself in the position to do that, and he gained the respect of Bill Belichick, number one, which is huge. And we all heard Bill, you know, gushing about how Cam has come in and been the hardest worker, and he's the first one in, last guy out. So now it's up to Cam to go out there and perform. You know, look, he just got there. You know, it's a little surprising that he's the captain, but on the flip side of that, because most teams, when you're starting quarterback and they flip the coin to start that game, most teams, the starting quarterback is in that group of guys. So for him to have the confidence not only to be the starter but to gain the respect of everybody in the locker room, I think that speaks volumes. So hopefully, you know, he can ride that into week one, and they can just all as a team use that and perform.
Kimberly, it's fascinating to me because there was so much speculation before this began that will Cam and Bill, who seem like such polar opposites, how will that combination work? What does this tell you?
That was the biggest question outside of Cam's health. Like you said, how would Bill and Cam get along? How would they work? Well, now we know. They are a match made in heaven because these two guys are united in making fans forget about the Tom Brady years. They understand the legacy, they respect it, but both of them have massive chips on their shoulders. They're trying to prove going forward that Tom Brady's in the past. This team, despite the opt-outs, despite all the circumstances, it is built to compete, and they want to show the world that, hey, we're still in it.
All right, Swagoo, what do you think here? We set the stage for you. How big a deal is it in your mind that not only is Cam the starter, which isn't a big surprise, but that Bill took the step of making him a captain?
Well, hell, G, I told you as soon as Cam signed, he was going to be the starter. Mm-hmm. I don't know, the whole Jared Stidham conversation was way over my head as far as we were talking about Cam damn Newton. Again, I said his name like 30 times when we were talking about this subject. Mm-hmm. To me, being the captain is the biggest. And obviously, you bring some stake in the game, knowing what you've done in the past in the NFL. But, gee, the biggest compliment, and Nink can tell you this as well, you get in this league is from your peers. It's not the media. It's not the coaches. When your peers deem you fit enough to either be a captain, to vouch for you as a starting quarterback in that role, for you to come in this quick and make that much headway. But this is no different than anything we've heard about Cam Newton throughout his career. There's these figments of imagination that Cam Newton is this type of guy. But all we've known out of Carolina for Cam's career is that he was a great teammate. He was a hard worker. He did enough to be the league MVP and lead a team to the Super Bowl. And all of his teammates in Carolina vouched for him. This is no different than the trajectory of his career. Had it not been for injuries, we would not be sitting here talking about this today. We'd be talking about Cam Newton getting ready to start another season where he's having success. So the captain part for me, for you to go in and ingratiate yourself in that locker room and these players believe in you in that way, that's the bigger part to me. But starting, G, damn, I told you that.
You did.
Three months ago.
You told me he was going to be the starting quarterback before they signed him. You said it made sense for Cam Newton to be the starting quarterback in New England. Rob Ninkovich, let me come back to you. Because, again, you were a captain for the Patriots for a few years. So all of us see, you know, you see the captains walk out for the opening coin toss. What else do you do? Like, what else do the captains do and the Patriots?
Well, usually you have a group of guys that are, you know, offense, defense, and they come together and have discussions with Bill. You talk about where your team's at heading into a weekend, and on a Friday you'd come in, you'd sit down, the groups would go through how the week is going, where they feel strong, the preparation have gone, where the weaknesses are in the preparation. You feel like in each position group where you have to be ready to go and play on Sunday. So usually as the captain, you have the collective voice of the team. And that's why the team votes you into that position. And when you have that position, you want to make sure that your voice is heard and Bill understands where the team is at.
Interesting. Kimberly, we did our division prediction on the AFC East the other day. I picked New England. Everybody on my panel told me I was wrong, and it's Buffalo. Who do you like in the AFC East?
Yeah, Patriots. Only because until the Patriots say otherwise, it goes through New England. No matter who the quarterback is, Bill Belichick is there. I love the Bills. Bills Mafia knows that, but they've got to prove that they can get over the hump of New England.
That's exactly right. Nothing could be more New England than them getting Cam Newton for nothing and him being great. All right, meanwhile, let me run through a bunch of other news and notes here as I get up and go. And it starts with our breaking news from this morning. The Washington football team releasing running back Adrian Peterson, who has been very productive, run for almost 2,000 yards for them over the last two seasons combined. He's 35 years old. He is now looking for a team. Elsewhere, Seattle re-signing suspended wide receiver Josh Gordon yesterday. He was suspended indefinitely in December for violating league policies on performance-enhancing substances and substances of abuse. But he's got another shot with the Seahawks. Grizzlies rookie Ja Morant named the NBA's Rookie of the Year. Got 99 out of a possible 100 first-place votes. Kendrick Nunn finished second. Zion finished third. He did get the other first-place vote. U.S. Open action, Serena Williams wins again, advancing in straight sets into the third round where she will face fellow American Sloane Stephens tomorrow. And you can watch Tennis Today on ESPN. Our live U.S. Open coverage continues noon Eastern. Former champ Naomi Osaka will look to advance to round four. Then Novak Djokovic will headline our primetime coverage at 7 Eastern on ESPN. Plus, we'll have additional primetime coverage on ESPN, too. And don't forget, you can see every point of the U.S. Open live on the ESPN app. And then there's this huge college football news. Just a few short weeks ago, the Pac-12 joined the Big Ten in postponing all fall sports with a possible spring return. But there is now this new development in daily rapid testing that could allow them to come back sooner than we expected. The commissioner of the Pac-12, Larry Scott, says maybe even before January 1st. And so Heather Dinich is back, and Paul Feinbaum and the Big Swag Goose stays with us. Heather, tell us more. You were on that call yesterday with the Pac-12. What is the significance of this new daily rapid testing, and what do we think it means in the Pac-12?
Well, Greeny, Larry Scott said that he expects these testing machines to be on every single campus in his conference by the end of this month. And that could potentially fast forward the league's return to playing college football games. Now, he did reiterate that decision will be made on science and data as they move forward. He pointed out, look, we still have six schools that couldn't start now if they wanted to, four in California, two in Oregon. The second main point from his conference was he has been speaking to Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren, and he told him specifically that he would like their conferences to align so that they could potentially have a meaningful postseason together. He didn't specifically say the Rose Bowl, but obviously that is the traditional game that he's talking about. I will point out that I talked to David Eads, the executive director of the Rose Bowl, and he said that it is premature at this point to talk about two Rose Bowl games. They are hosting a semifinal for the CFP. But he did point out they've done it before in 2010 and 2014 with the national championship for the BCS and the Rose Bowl.
Right. So there are a lot of things in a year that is unprecedented that wouldn't be unprecedented there. Marcus, let me come to you. We've not had you on this yet this morning. The idea that maybe the Pac-12 and the Big Ten would align, they would play some semblance of a season that could start as early as Thanksgiving and play it into the winter and the early spring, and maybe have some kind of Rose Bowl or other championship. What would you think of that? Do you think the best players would play? Would it be meaningful? What would be your thoughts if those two conferences found a way to get together and do that?
One, I don't think the best players would play. Meaningful, yes, because you still would have some of those guys that need that particular time frame to play and positively affect their draft status if that's the route that they want to take in improvement. Gee, when we start talking about players not playing during this time period, we're talking about surefire guys that have the opportunity to go in the first round and have gotten grades already to be projected as highly. And some guys are making that decision based on being drafted 1 through 3. opting out of the season. The second thing that comes to mind for me is, as we continue to see these developments, the climate for the Pac-12 and Big Ten changes. Why wouldn't they want to be aligned? They aligned on not playing. So at some point, when things develop and they continue to move forward, they will have a conversation about trying to play. A part of this is saving face, so both of them can go through the storm that will come by starting a season earlier than they had planned or imagined. And the second part is, there are three conferences right now that's about to get ready to kick off, and the Pac-12 and Big Ten aren't. So they need to capture some kind of headline throughout this process in order to keep their conferences in this particular season they're talking about relevant. It still tells me that the decision was made too quick.
Paul, let me come to you on that. I don't have time right now to play the soundbite we played earlier from Dabo Swinney, the coach of Clemson. But to paraphrase, he basically said, I think it's great that those conferences play, but we're not waiting. He would not be at all in favor of the three other conferences waiting for those to come along. So I'll ask you the same question I asked Swagoo. If we wind up with basically two seasons that don't run concurrently, three of the Power Five playing starting soon, the other two starting a little later, what would the second season mean?
It wouldn't mean much, but right now, Greeny, it means more than what they have. Marcus is 100% correct. I mean, we had football last night. We'll have it all weekend. It's next week the ACC starts. So right now, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are irrelevant. They're on the dark side of the moon, and nobody really cares about them except to hear their fans and their players whine about what went wrong with the administration. So they have to do something. It's incumbent upon them to make an announcement. I mean, they could announce tomorrow that Michigan and Ohio State will be playing in a Walmart parking lot at midnight, and that's better than where they are right now. So they have to say something.
Well, I'm nonplussed. That's a great line. We'll see what they wind up doing. Heather, thank you for all the outstanding work. You can follow all of the details here because it is just a crazy time. All of you stay with me. We have much more to do as we continue on Get Up. When it comes to social issues, Dak Prescott says players should express themselves, but how will that sit with Jerry Jones? Stephen A. and Swagoo have thoughts. Next, Get Up, ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and we opened with a crazy buzzer-beating Toronto victory over Boston. How about the other game in the bubble last night? Game one, Nuggets, Clippers, and this one belonged to Kawhi Leonard. Midway through the second, Clippers by six. Kawhi just heating up. Sets his feet, drills it. Clippers a nine-point lead. Later, it's Kawhi. Why give it up when you can just do this? Kawhi 19 in the first half. Clippers had an 18-point lead at the break. To the third, more from Kawhi. Jeremy Grant playing D. Jeremy Grant is in some trouble. Clippers up 16. Clippers would shoot 57% from the floor in this game. More Kawhi Leonard. The lead is 21 on this one in the lane. Kawhi Leonard would shoot 12 of 16 from the floor in this game. Still in the third. Kawhi still not done. That off balance. Oh, that's a tough shot. That is a tough shot. Leonard finishes with 29. Look at the body control. This one was no contest. Basically right from the jump. Clippers win it 120-97. So they're up one game to none. Meanwhile, the other Western Conference series begins tonight, and you will see it on ESPN. LeBron and the Lakers, game one against Harden and the Rockets. Coverage begins 9 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. The news yesterday that broke right as we were going off the air here on Get Up, and that is the surprising news that Steve Nash, Hall of Fame point guard and two-time league MVP, has been hired as the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Their general manager, Sean Marks, said this today.
I understand where Stephen A. is coming from, but I think in this moment in time, I'm looking to hire, the best person, the best fit for this job at this moment in time. And that is undoubtedly Steve Nash. We did cast a very wide net, a very diverse net in looking at candidates. And there's a lot of tremendous candidates out there without a doubt. At the end of the day, it came down to who we wanted to be the head of our snake. And that's Steve.
Okay, so that was Sean Marks on KJZ this morning on ESPN Radio. Stephen A. Smith and Swagoo are back with us this morning, and I want to make sure I'm caught up on all of the things that have happened, because apparently it happened while I was on the air here. So that was Sean Marks responding, Steve, I guess, to some comments that you had yesterday about the hiring of Steve Nash. So that was what Sean Marks had to say today. Steve, where's your head as of this morning?
My head is the same place that I was yesterday. I said it yesterday. I said it a month ago. I said it years ago. I'm going to continue to say it today and beyond. It is an example of white privilege, but I wasn't pointing the finger at Sean Marks nor Steve Nash. I don't blame Steve Nash for taking the job, and I certainly don't blame Sean Marks completely for offering him the job, because he's got two resident stars in Kyrie Irving and especially Kevin Durant, who is the voice of the Brooklyn Nets, who clearly wanted Steve Nash and obviously signed off on it. So if you're Sean Marks, that definitely is a plus in your direction. We understand it. What I meant when I said white privilege is that this kind of opportunity does not come along for black coaches. You don't have any kind of coaching resume whatsoever other than playing a developmental consultant role with the Golden State Warriors. That's it. You've never been an assistant coach. You haven't been a scout. You haven't been somebody that's been a head coach in the National Basketball Association. And you being a resident puppy, that's Steve Nash, your first job as a head coach is of a championship contender with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. That does not happen for black people. That's what I meant by white privilege. So I'm very sorry that Sean Marks had to come on the air and address questions about white privilege that emanated from me, because I wasn't pointing the finger at him. I'm pointing the finger at a system that basically highlights the fact that there are rules for us and then there are rules for other people. 60% of the white population, that's what exists in the United States of America. You have been covering professional sports for many, many years, Greeny. I'm in my 27th year as a professional journalist. I have never, ever seen a black coach get such a pristine opportunity out the jump. It has never happened. Derek Fisher doesn't qualify. It was the Knicks' job, but they stunk, okay? Doc Rivers was in a rebuilding mode when he got the Orlando job, okay? When you look at other guys, that is the situation. The fact of the matter is, when it comes to Steve Nash, and to a lesser degree, Steve Kerr, the bottom line is that those kind of opportunities don't happen for black people. I said it before. I've been saying it for years. I'm going to continue to say it. And the real person that I'm pointing the finger at are the two stars on the Brooklyn Nets, because I'm thinking about the process. Maybe they did have a diverse slew of candidates that they talked to or whatever. We didn't hear about it. We don't know about it. But bottom line is, when you are an African-American, particularly in the world of professional sports, and we see the numbers dwindling right now in a league that's nearly 80% black, there's four black head coaches. Two of them got fired, Nate McMillan and Alvin Gentry, already since the bubble took place. And so when you look at it from that perspective and you see the dwindling numbers and you see the advent of analytics and how African-Americans ain't necessarily being hired for those positions or to become head coaches under that system, the bottom line is that the numbers are dwindling before our very eyes, and the black players don't seem to be saying anything about it. They damn sure don't seem to be doing anything about it. Somebody has to, so I'm doing it. Simple.
I get it. And it's important, I think, to make the distinction of what you were saying, because I saw the pushback yesterday seemed to be about Derek Fisher and about Doc Rivers and I think Mark Jackson and Jason Kidd and others who've had opportunities. The distinction you're making is
rebuilding,
it's not
projects.
That they've never gotten the job. It's that this is a job that feels very different from most any other.
Well, let me before Swagoo comes in, here's what I'm specifically saying, Greeny. Steve Nash gonna win at least 50 games. You got Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
You're not losing. So you walk into a winning proposition, which is only going to extend your career. The point is that if you're black, but you have rebuilding projects, you might make progress, but at some point they pull a plug from you and they bring somebody else in to reap the benefits of your labor. That doesn't happen for white guys, like in Steve Nash's case. It's not his fault. It's not Sean Marks' fault, even to some degree, because he's capitulating to what Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving wanted. I'm just saying it is an example of white privilege. And by that, I mean it is something that happens for white folks. It does not happen for us. That's what I mean by white privilege.
coach.
I get it. And so, Marcus, if I could come to you, and anyone who doesn't watch our show may not realize, Swagoo knows as much about basketball as anybody you're going to come across. I made the statement earlier, if I could just sort of segue briefly, the pressure on Nash is extraordinary because I think with those two guys in the Eastern Conference, anything short of the NBA Finals would be a huge disappointment. And actually, Kendrick Perkins one-upped it, and he said, Greeny, I disagree. Anything short of a championship is a disappointment if those guys are healthy. How do you see it, Marcus?
100% agree, at least the NBA championship. You look at the East right now, and for all intents and purposes, with Kyrie, Kevin Durant, Dinwiddie, all of these guys that are playing on the Nets team, but the first two names is the focal point. Do we not believe that they would beat Boston? Do we not believe that they would beat the Raptors? Do we not believe that they would beat Giannis and the Bucks? Like, when we think about this and this type of job that Steve Nash has gotten, he is set up for success immediately because of the guys that's going to take the floor. Now, they got to work those things out, and coaching comes into play. I remember I liken this back to Eric Spoelstra when LeBron signed in Miami. Everybody didn't give him credit for being a good coach because of the guys that he was putting on the floor. Same situation Steve Nash is going to be in. He is in a situation now where you are looking at a team, to Stephen A's point, to your point, G, and to KP's point. This is a championship contender. Hell, when they signed, before they decided to hire Steve Nash as a coach, we thought they were championship contenders with the two guys. At one point, there was arguments about Kevin Durant being the best player in the NBA. Obviously, the Achilles injury happened. We talk about Kyrie and seeing what he's been able to do on a championship level. There is no expectation outside of a championship. So to have any other type of conversation about rebuilding or it's going to take a while or all of that would be crazy based on what we watch and transpire in the NBA now. Guys are not coupling up to build anymore. They are coupling up to be in the championship right the very next year, like we see Kawhi and Paul George doing right now with the Clippers, trying to be champions.
I really wanted to get both of you guys' take on the Cowboys thing. Allie, do I have time to do the Dallas? Okay, good. So I really wanted to ask both of you this question today. If that, Stephen A., unless there's anything further you want to say, I want to make sure. Hold on, before we roll that, I'm sorry,
No,
Chris.
No. I was just being lighthearted because you brought up the Cowboys.
Oh, okay.
I was just being lighthearted because you brought up the Cowboys. That's all good.
Okay, fair enough. So here I am producing the show out here on the fly. Everyone's going to yell at me, and they'll be right. Here's the deal. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, and we have talked a great deal about this, and Stephen A. has talked about it a lot, has not been supportive of players kneeling during the national anthem in the past. Earlier this week, Dak Prescott said he thinks players should have the freedom to express themselves individually, but support each other collectively. Yesterday, Tyrone Crawford had this to say. He said, "We definitely have the green light on all that, but also just trying to find something that's going to make a boom. It's not just going to be something that people look at one time and kind of swipe by it. We want to do something that makes a boom, and that's something that people remember and actually create some change, and we'll figure that out." So that's what they're saying amongst the players in Dallas. Stephen A., I feel like you were very vocal on this show leading up to the time where Jerry Jones was really very quiet during the earliest times of the recent events surrounding the Black Lives Matter movement. I wonder what you think now, as we were a week away from the start of the season, hearing these Cowboys players saying this. What is your expectation?
Well, first of all, congratulations to the Cowboys players. Welcome to the party. They've been AWOL for quite some time. The fact that we've heard from Dak Prescott on this matter and now Tyrone Crawford, I applaud them. Better late than never. That's my response about them. Now for Jerry Jones. You know, it actually hurts me in a very serious way to be ultra critical of Jerry Jones on these issues, because I in all sincerity, all joking aside, because of my hatred for Cowboy fans, I really have a lot of affection for Jerry Jones. I genuinely like him, and I have profound respect for him as a businessman and the owner for the Dallas Cowboys. My issue with Jerry Jones, and the reason why I felt so adamant about calling him out, guys, is because Jerry Jones was adamant about his position from Jump Street back in 2016, 2017, and beyond, as it pertained to Colin Kaepernick. So my whole position was, I never took the stance, Jerry Jones, you have to take this position or that position. All I demanded was that Jerry Jones come out of hiding. You were front and center in speaking out about how your players would not take a knee, they would not kneel, they would exercise patriotism, and you bought into that narrative and all of this other stuff to feed your base. We get that. But where are you once all of this really, really hit a tipping point over the last few months? You don't get to be conspicuous and then go into hiding. That was my only issue. And I think that a lot of people were looking for me to say, Jerry Jones should say this or Jerry Jones should say that. I would prefer that he be on the right side of history in terms of taking a side in regards to promoting, addressing social justice issues. But if he chooses not to, as a billionaire owner for the Cowboys, because he says it's going to hurt my bottom line and that's my priority, I can't fault him for that either. That's his right. My only issue was that you don't get to hide later after being so conspicuous earlier. And I think a lot of people misconstrued my position about him. I just wanted him to speak and stop hiding and come out and take a position. I don't want to hear about grace. I don't want to see you dancing around issues. You were not dancing years ago. Don't dance now. That's all I'm saying.
Marcus, you played for the Cowboys. You played for Jerry Jones. What are your thoughts?
Stephen A., to your point, though, and I think when I heard you talking about Jerry during that time, listen, this is his preference. I tell people all the time, man, like, I want to hear from owners. The best scenario is for these owners of these teams to come out and be in support. The reality is, it ain't all a preference. And somebody had to tell me that. Instead of thinking of this thing holistically and everybody's watching what's transpiring in this country and thinking that these guys gonna come out and support it even against how they really feel. The bottom line is, Jerry doesn't feel the way everybody feels. I said this about the Drew Brees situation. And gee, if you remember, I was on this show. I said I'm done going through these emotional highs and lows of waiting for people to say something. The bottom line is this. Jerry Jones has a different idea about what's supposed to transpire when it comes to social justice. The thing that I'm happy about, Marcus, whether that's you come to because all of this stuff transpired or where you are right now, is that the players feel like they can have a voice and put an opinion forward now, which I thought was the problem initially when you kneeled to take pictures for cameras as opposed to really kneeling for what was really transpiring and taking place.
Steve,
Marcus, my
go
position,
ahead.
And I'll come back at you with this, Marcus. My position was never that we should hear from the owners. My position was that we should hear from Jerry Jones, because Jerry Jones stepped out and he was loquacious and outspoken about it. More than that, he restricted and adamantly acknowledged he was restricting anyone in a Cowboys uniform to defy his wishes. So not only was he acting in a certain way, but he was trying to dictate now how they acted. Now that doesn't appear to be the case, and that's great. But all I'm saying is, you were adamant and defiant and specific about your position in the past. There's nothing wrong with asking you to do that now. Not only is Jerry Jones, you, because you were the one that
Stephen
took
A.,
that
we
lead
know
to begin with.
We know why. It's comfort. He's comfortable now. Like a lot of people that weren't comfortable. All right, I know we out of time, but this is a great convo.
It's one that we will pick up.
Yeah, because if
go ahead, Stephen.
If I take a position all the time, Marcus, and then all of a sudden I'm quiet, you would say, "Yo, where you at? You was talking before. Why you quiet now?"
Yeah.
That's all we're doing.
Jerry Jones, unquestionably, the most visible NFL owner by far on almost every other issue besides this. I hate to leave it there, but I have to. I have to run. Stephen A., First Take coming up in just a few minutes. We will take a break here quickly. Aaron Rodgers' replacement was drafted by the Packers this year. Will he still win the division this season? Our prediction is next. Get up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and we have breaking news, a Woj bomb just into our newsroom. The Brooklyn Nets are hiring Steve Nash, legendary point guard, two-time NBA MVP, as their new head coach. He gets a four-year deal. There's the tweet from Woj. Hall of Fame guard Steve Nash has signed a four-year contract to become the next coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Sources tell ESPN. That's big. It's a surprise. To me, it comes out of nowhere. Do I have RJ and Fizz? I do. RJ, you played for the Nets. You went to the finals with the Nets. What's your reaction to Steve Nash? Look at your face. What's your reaction?
No. All kidding aside, like, we're joking, but this is out of nowhere. Obviously, I have a lot of connections. Right. I call games for the Brooklyn Nets. Know so many people in the organization. Steve Nash I didn't even know he wanted to coach. And so, you know, Steve is one of the smartest basketball minds that I've ever been around, is beloved by everybody he's ever played with. But I just didn't know. So I look forward to this. I trust Sean Marks. I believe that Steve wouldn't have been hired a first-time head coach if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving didn't also believe in the hire. I think you do that when you have great players. You see what, you know, kind of the room is. And, you know, I wish, you know, Steve Nash the best of luck, and I look forward to it.
Coach, you know the pressures of coaching in that city. You coached the Knicks. He also has the pressures of extraordinary expectations with KD and Kyrie, as Richard just mentioned. What's your reaction?
Well, I think this is an explosive hire. I think it's a great hire. I mean, you're talking about one of the best, greatest basketball minds our game has ever seen. And like you said, that hire wouldn't have happened without the sign off of those stars. You know, KD signed off on this. You know, Kyrie signed off on this. And so I think it's a heck of a move. I think it's out of the box. It reminds me a lot of Steve Kerr going to Golden State at the time. I played against Steve in college for 4 straight years. He was a nightmare to play against. He was a nightmare to prepare against as a coach. And I think he's going to do a great job.
All right, there you have it. Again, breaking news, Woj with a bomb. Steve Nash, the new coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Guys, thank you very much. More on that as we continue. Meanwhile, a man who knows his share of breaking news is Adam Schefter, and he is up against Hembo this morning. Schefter, it's a tough question, including playoffs. Which quarterback won the most career games against NFC East opponents?
I'm going to guess Joe Montana, just because I remember so many giant 49er great playoff games. I'm sure it's not right, but that's my guess this morning.
Well, I have to believe that it is an NFC East quarterback, right? Because that's someone who would have played against those division teams all the time. And the answer is indeed Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman with 52 career wins. There you have it. That's a tough one from Sneaky Hembo. Roger Staubach would have been second. Meanwhile, Schefter, you're going to like this. The NFL season kicks off a week from today. We continue our previews with the NFC East. Dallas is the favorite, according to Caesars' William Hill, to win the division, followed closely by Philly, who took the title last year. That's what they think. Here's what I think. Over the last 3 seasons, the Giants have been the NFL's worst team. Is Joe Judge the man to turn them around? The jury is out. They'll go as far as Saquon takes them. He's tremendous, but that won't be far. At least, though, they're better than Washington, which has 5 first-round picks on the D-line and almost nothing else. I love Ron Rivera and still believe in Dwayne Haskins, but this could be a long year. How about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys?
Well, they've got a new coach, a motivated quarterback, and a new stud on the outside, plus Zeke. But it's been a quarter century since this team made a conference championship. You just can't trust them.
They will not let you down. They are an accident waiting to happen.
So by default, fly Eagles fly. At least I trust the coach, and I love the quarterback. If Wentz stays healthy, always a big if, he's a candidate for MVP. And Philly will become the first team to win the NFC East back-to-back in 16 years. That's what I think. What do my guys think? D. Wood, what do you think? I got the Eagles winning the NFC East. Agree or disagree?
Greeny, I picked the Eagles before everything. But, man, I got to tell you, I might jump back on that Cowboys bandwagon like I did last year. I might do it.
Why?
I like pain. Listen, I think the main reason why is I think the coach. I mean, we lamented Jason Garrett. Felt like he didn't bring out the best in the Cowboys. I think Mike McCarthy is the reason why he's with the Dallas Cowboys. He got the pedigree. He's won a Super Bowl. I think that might be enough to put the Cowboys over the top in the NFC East.
Mike Tannenbaum, who's your pick?
I have great evidence here. It is the Dallas Cowboys, and here's why. I believe in offensive line play. Look at the size of Damian Woody's house. I paid for it. I believed in offensive line play 10 years ago. I still do. We're missing Brandon Brooks. We're missing Andre Dillard. I loved the Eagles 3 weeks ago, but at some point, D. Wood's going to come out of retirement. He'll be playing for the Eagles. So the proof is in Damian Woody's size of the house. I'm going with the Cowboys.
Hey, I'm ready. I'm still ready. Believe that.
Schefter, the one thing that gives me great pause is that the Eagles, again, have all of these injuries. I mean, they were decimated last year, and it has started again before the season even begins. Give everyone a sense who's not been following just some of the adversity that the Eagles are going to have to overcome if they're going to do what I say they're going to do.
Yeah, well, the biggest adversity they're going to have to overcome is the fact that you're picking them to win the division, Greeny. Once they can get past that, then they have to deal with the offensive line injuries. And the offensive line injuries are big. You lose Andre Dillard, a left tackle. That hurts. Brandon Brooks is a guard. I don't know if many people realize, might have been the best guard in all of football. You lose the left side of your offensive line, the starting left side. That's a blow to anybody. And yes, again, then they get the death knell with you picking them. This is a tough year for Philadelphia.
No question about it. Hashtag KOD is a lot. Alive and well. D-Wood, how much of this is based also on just, and my pick was based just on the fact that Cowboys, you just can't trust them. I mean, I've actually come around to Stephen A's way of thinking. You just can't trust him. You finally trust him, Damian Woody?
Hey, Greeny, I was scarred from last year because I picked the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl, get to the Super Bowl last year. So obviously I'm scarred, but I mean, look, Mike T and Adam and Shefty talked about it. The injuries on the offensive line, it's just those type of things, especially this year, are so hard to overcome. So that's why I'm going to Dallas Cowboys.
I agree. I can't really argue against that. It concerns me greatly. But I just have had Stephen A. Smith on this show too many times pointing out that you can't trust the Cowboys for me to go ahead and pick them. Guys, thank you. And again, my poll question is up, and we will pay this off on my radio show later today. I'd like to know what you think. Who do you have winning the NFC East? Interested to see how many people take the Giants or Washington, Cowboys, Eagles, who you got, at ESPN Greeny on Twitter. Meanwhile, First Take is coming up in about 5 minutes. Max and Stephen A. will react to the breaking news just into the newsroom. Steve Nash, the new coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Good move, bad move? They'll talk about it in just a few minutes, right here on ESPN.
Remember to request your absentee ballot. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Get Up is brought to you by Gatorade. For athletes who make the days count, nothing beats Gatorade. Today on ESPN2, the second annual UEFA Nations League tournament kicks off with soccer powerhouses Germany and Spain squaring off. That's today, 2:30 Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. I want to give you a look at how the poll is shaping up right now. Again, I asked who you believe will win the NFC East. Not a surprise that Washington and the Giants getting very little support right now. 50% say the Cowboys. That will stay open through my radio show, so you can chime in on my Twitter page at ESPN Greeny. And then again, huge breaking news from Adrian Wojnarowski in just the last few minutes. Steve Nash, a 4-year contract to coach the Brooklyn Nets. That one really seemed to come out of absolutely nowhere. We talked about it with Richard Jefferson moments ago. I can tell you that Nash worked with Kevin Durant in Golden State. Nash was involved with the Warriors in some capacity while KD was there. And we just saw some video of the two of them working together. So he was in player development with the Warriors. So there's some connection between Kevin Durant, the star for the Nets, and Steve Nash, 2-time former MVP and Hall of Famer, now their head coach. So much to react to on radio. I'll do that starting at noon Eastern. And for First Take, now.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.